Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
And welcome again to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're grateful that you join us, and we're grateful to have our special guest on tonight, Mr. Greg Smith, who is going to speak from reality, in his own words, about where we are. And our topic tonight is, in their own words, a discussion with young men about economic freedom. You've heard me speak, you've heard other guests that we've had on, and this is a gentleman who has a family and works and has a perspective. We hope to have Brother Charles, who was on with us on Tuesday, to join us again, as well as our in-house panelist, Pastor Ricky Waller, who's the author of Still High. As I mentioned, this is a follow-up to the discussion we had this Tuesday on Talk Straight. What we'll do now is we'll go ahead and begin our dialogue, our monologue, and then we will come in and bring our guests in. And tonight we want to hear from, well, I'll talk about that in just a little bit when I introduce it, but the number here is 657-383-0944. You can call us directly here at the studio if you want to join the conversation. We'll be happy to entertain your question, your comments. We just ask that you make it relevant to our discussion thread and that it be respectful. We recognize that different individuals have different opinions. We want to hear yours, and we want to have you share that here on Talk Straight. The number is 657-383-0944, where you can call us tonight and share in this live dialogue on this broadcast. Again, the topic is, in their own words, a discussion with young men about economic freedom. Proverbs, the 20th chapter and the 27th verse, spirit of man is the candle of the Lord, searching all the inward parts of the belly. I want to talk about the condition and status of African American males and people in general from 1985 to 2015 and the present. So from 1985 to present, we're talking about 30 years, really 32 years now. And incidentally, that is the group that we speak of often when we talk about millennials and individuals who are really making their way now, starting families and in the workforce, and even those that are struggling in certain sectors. So in 1985, the class status and the family principle for African Americans 32 years ago was as such. People who in the United States that were previously classified as Negro, colored, black, and Afro-Americans were then recognized by the majority population as African-American, given the fact that this social identification implies dual citizenship in and somewhere or nation and the United States of America. It presents somewhat of a confusion for those seeking to understand just where their birthright is geographically. And this was sparked by a suggestion of Reverend Jesse Jackson, who in 83 ran for the United States presidency, basically, unsuccessfully. But he had a lot of influence, and this was one of his major influences on African-American culture. In 85, the mentality and violent tendencies from 85 to 2015 and really to present can be surmised as thus. Collectively, the present generation that we're speaking of African-American males, tend to be anxious, aggressive, and paranoid of their social environment. We see that many of the marches, the protests, and the riots in the last 3 years. Those considered most at risk see their future as a mystery. Apparent alienation in the workforce, in educational pursuits, and the American dream caused many of them to respond to social conflicts with physical violence. Tragically, the violence is perpetrated against those who look like them and who come from their same communities. In terms of expressions of self-determination and drive that we saw back in the 60s, the 50s, and the 40s, well, it was like this in 85 up to this present point. A general fear of social defeat seriously deters efforts of self-improvement and expressions of pride and heritage for far too many, not everybody, but far too many African-American males at this present point. The future of this American subgroup as a whole seems hopeless often and uncertain. Lastly, I want to speak from the political platform. Where are they politically as a member of society? For a huge majority of African-American males of this generation, voting is seen as an unrelated and irrelevant activity relative to their best interests. It's not necessary. Consequently, they tend not to participate in the electoral process, or if they do, they only do it under the pressure of family members and friends to simply vote as a Democrat, as they've done since 1935, beginning with President Roosevelt. This leaves them in a position where they're ill-informed about who and what they're voting for, and at the end of the day, they simply are on someone else's agenda when it comes to what they need for themselves economically, materially, socially, and the whole nine yards. And that's what we're talking about tonight. We're going to hear from some young brothers' perspectives tonight. And we want them to come straight with us and tell us where we're wrong. Lastly, before I bring our guest on, Mr. Smith, I just want to share with you one of the 98 case studies that BFC Institute, Building Families and Communities Institute, engaged in and put together as a part of our lecture series. When we come to each of the targeted cities, we have a workbook or a lecture pamphlet that have all 98 of these case studies. identifying key issues or events that had tremendous impact on the life and the identity and the status of particularly African-American males, because that's where the focus is. And this is case study 84. On October 16th, 1995, in a curious partnership, Minister Louis Farrakhan, who is the leader of the Nation of Islam, Reverend Dr. Benjamin F. Chavis, who was former NAACP president and a Baptist minister, and the late Reverend Dr. James Luther Bevel Sr., who was one of Dr. King's lieutenants during the Civil Rights Movement. Together, they put their heads together and organized what was known as the Million Man March, a massive political demonstration that occurred in Washington, D.C. Estimates of the number of marchers, most of whom were African-American men, ranged from 400,000 to 1.1 million. And it was said to be one of the largest gatherings of that kind in American history. Future events, however, after 1995, would prove that the cause that they were trying to bring light to was unsuccessful. Stated aims to promote African-American male unity, family, values for society as a subgroup, and America as a whole. When we look at the plight of young brothers today, we have to ask the question, how effective were they in their aims? Now let me move to bring our guest in, Mr. Gregory Smith. How you doing, sir?
Doing great.
Great, great. Mr. Smith comes to us from, I believe it's is it Spring Hill, Tennessee?
Yes, Spring Hill, Tennessee.
Spring Hill, Tennessee. And he's going to share with us in his own words. See? And we have our panelists on, Pastor Ricky Waller, and hopefully Mr. Charles will be able to join us there. Good afternoon, Pastor Waller.
Hey, how you doing, Pastor Dockery? How you doing, brother?
Wonderful,
all right.
Wonderful, wonderful. Let's get right into it. I'm sorry, go ahead, Pastor.
Yeah, Charles will be tuned in a little bit.
Okay, great. We'll look forward to having you. Let's get right into it, gentlemen. Mr. Smith, where did I go wrong?
I don't believe you went wrong. I think I think it's a rippling effect for financial stability and success that starts from the beginning of a family and community that's destroyed at an early point to where you can't succeed later down the line.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
I believe that you start off in the beginning as a child or a baby, and you're not given the right principles and values and traits and characteristics that it takes to become a man.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
You go through the stage of being a child. The next thing, you're trying to become a grown man. Now you're 18, and you don't have a father figure or a mentor to teach you how to become a man. So that's 18 years you're at now. Then you get to 20 or 25 or 30, and you finally taught yourself now how to become a man. So that's 10 years of failure that you didn't have because you had no family, no community to teach you how to become a man. Because a woman can't teach a man how to become a man.
Okay.
So okay. I see a rippling effect that starts from the beginning that causes a catastrophic end.
Right. You make a very powerful point and a valid point. It sounds as if, is it fair to conclude from what you're saying, and I agree with your premise, that a lot of brothers start off at a deficit or behind. I like
in
the
beginning,
way you frame
yes.
that. Yeah, I like the way you frame that. They start from behind simply because they
didn't have the right tools.
Right. And wow. Okay. But Charles, how you doing, man?
All right, how's it going?
We appreciate you being back. We have Brother Smith on with us tonight, and you know Pastor Wallace joined us as usual. And we also have yourself that's coming. And we got another caller, 615-2794. Good evening. How are you? Caller? You there?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, hey, how are you?
Great, you?
Great, great. Thanks for tuning in with us. Feel free to jump in here anytime. So what Mr. Smith said, I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry, Carla, go ahead.
No, I was trying to listen because I was trying to plug my phone up, but now I'm listening. What were y'all talking about tonight?
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for joining us. First of all, this is Talk Straight, and this is your host, Reverend Dockery. The topic tonight is, in their own words, a discussion with young men about economic freedom. And this is a pickup from our Tuesday night discussion where we were talking about the correlation between faith, fatherhood, and family in relationship to economic freedom, and that being the basis of instruction. And we were grateful to have Ms. Charles to join us with our panelists and another gentleman. And he shared some very powerful things, and I hope he'll kind of reiterate some of that tonight. But we have Mr. Smith with us tonight, and he made an excellent point, Charles. And he said simply that what happens is you let particularly a male grow up to be 18 years old, 20, 25, 30. And by the time he's 30, society expects him to know how to be responsible, but he has not had that example or that focused training. And he has to teach himself. So he finds himself behind a little bit, behind the eight ball, trying to catch up with reality and what's expected of him. What do you think about that, Brother Charles?
Yes, that's definitely true. I guess to go back to the beginning of how everything kind of came about as far as being up in America, first of all. And there's a lot of the things that we had, you know, instead was supposed to be instilled, that's taken away, so it was nothing to pour into the man. So you're right, by the time you get to the age of 25 and 30, you're just now starting to realize what you realize at the same time that you fall behind as well.
Yeah. Is that, and I'm not looking for excuses, that we certainly don't need that, but would that explain why it is it's so difficult for young men to maintain healthy relationships even with their female counterparts, because there's so much that they missed out on at an early age in terms of preparing them for that. Is that a rational thought?
Cut it down, Dave.
Or do you find fault with that?
In a way, it plays a major role in definitely in a relationship, because once you're in a relationship, you know, we have a role to play as a man. Now, if you go out there and you can't go out there and portray that man if you're not given the opportunity to be that man. And
right.
That comes apart in the household, definitely with finances. See, the woman don't understand. She know the man's supposed to take care of the household, but reality is the man go out there and seek. He seek that, but sometimes he can't come about with that, and that causes destruction within the household, because
Absolutely.
That's a controlled thing. Because you have to ask someone for that. You have to, you know, put an application in. You have to qualify. You have to be a certain whatever. There's a lot of things that go along with it.
Interesting. I'm sorry, I didn't cut you off. You said something key. What I want to do is to bring in the words from Malcolm X, and I want to hear just a little bit of Dr. King and James Bevel himself and Dr. Carson. And I want to ask you all something. But before I do that, caller 2794, what do you think about that idea that perhaps that's an explanation, not an excuse, but why there's so much tension in male-female relationships for individuals who, not that they're bad people, but they've struggled and have not had certain training and background?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I come from a family of 12. My mama had 12 kids, 8 boys and 4 girls.
Okay,
and she was married
okay.
to 2 of the fathers, and one of the fathers she was not. And She struggled all her life with low self-esteem, one of the beautiful ladies I ever met in my life. But the good thing about she knew who God was. So with her knowing who God was, in spite of whatever she ran into, she always instilled in us who he was and that we can always be something in somebody. And we all, a lot of us ran into drugs, alcohol, and everything, but some of us didn't. But even she ran into alcohol. Even she died 2 years ago. But the thing of it is, today I have one son, and I try to teach my son to be a man and be dependent, independent. You can work for whatever you want and you can have, but you got to work. You know, you get our young people are dying today like flies, man. They are killing our kids up. But I instill it in my son. I know he get tired of hearing it. I said every day, you got to work hard to have something. And today, our young kids are so caught up thinking that getting out here hustling and laying up having kids is the way of life, and it's not. So it makes it harder on the young lady with the kids because I just want to share just a little bit. I was so caught up with my mama having abusive men in her life to where men was, I was addicted to men. They didn't have to even have a job. I worked. But until I seeked God and found out what a real man was really all about, even though I knew, I stopped. You know, so I try to go and tell young people, men, women, whoever you are, you know, that you got to work, you got to work, you got to work.
Okay.
You know, you got to apply yourself. You got to know how to go out here and don't lose your foundation. And the foundation is very strong.
Right.
So,
what did you say your name was again? What'd you say your name
My name is Candy Sanders. My real name is Sarah. But learned about your show through Pastor Ricky Waller.
Oh, praise God. Praise God. Praise God. So, Carrie,
Reverend Duffy, and I just wanted to interject and put a point in to what you were saying.
Okay.
That's the same deficit that I was speaking about earlier, because now in her relationship with her and her son, you have a woman attempting to teach a growing boy how to become a man. So naturally that causes a problem immediately because the boy can't see himself as the woman.
Okay.
We need more. I'm not calling it an excuse. I'm calling the call to action for more leaders and role models.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
We do need we do need a lot of male.
Black men. Black
role
men.
Models.
I need to look. A
but
young boy
when
needs
I had
to look up and see a black man that he can become and he can see himself as. Instead, we have the drug dealer, the gang member. They have no problem bringing you under their arm.
Right.
Well, I do pretty good with my son. I can't speak for no other parent. I do
right.
pretty good with my son.
No, I'm not saying
when,
you're doing anything wrong. It's a great thing because my mom, I was in the same situation, but it's just hard for a youth to see himself as that person through the eyes of his mother. That's all I'm saying.
Hold on, all right, go ahead and finish your thought there, Ms. Sanders.
But see, I have 8 brothers, and the first 4 older brothers, they all one of my brothers passed, but he always worked, always in the church, knew the word of God, tried to be a provider for his wife and his kids. My second brother, now I just called him and sent him a card and thanked him for everything that he had done because he was our father figure. Our fathers went off and left my mama, and the ones that she stayed with beat her half to death, but she survived. But my second always taught us that a man is the ruler of the house. That means that he say he the man. That means that, now, I don't know how men do it today, but I do know back in the day, he ain't number 65, and he still provides for his family. His wife,
okay.
She really never had to work because he always worked and made sure the bills and everything was paid. So,
okay.
I've always dreamed of a man like that, but I ain't found one.
All right, let me do this. I want to give our guests ample time. I want you to chime in there when you can. But I want to make it clear to all of our listening audience, the number you listen to Talk Straight, our topic tonight is, in their own words, a discussion with young men about economic freedom. I want it to be clear that our primary purpose is not to place blame, but to offer instruction and change, proactive change. The purpose of this show is to spread a national dialogue along this line so that we can do that not just in our local area, but other target areas across urban America, because we do have a problem.
Right.
And as Mr. Smith was saying, we do need, and Brother Charles, we do need someone to step up and to teach that. Now, some people had to struggle, and they had to do things the best way they can. But after all this time, we should be able to get it right now where we can end that struggle. We should be able to end the struggle for women when they have children and build families and have healthy relationships and things of that nature. So that's our primary. We digress a little bit. Let's get back on track here. Let me do this right quickly, and then we're going to hear from Malcolm X. And gentlemen, Charles and Mr. Smith, I'd like for y'all to comment. And Pastor Waller, you there? We know you're there. And Pastor Waller laying back on us tonight, but that's good. He in the house. Let's hear from Malcolm. Let's hear what Malcolm X says about the power of unity and voting and using the ballot box. He talked about the ballot of the bullet in the 60s before he was killed.
In the United Nations, you have poor nations and rich nations. They say that the most powerful bloc in the UN are the African Asian bloc. These are the poor nations. Yet they carry more weight in this political body than the nations do who have all the money. Why? Because no matter how wealthy America is, she only has one vote. No matter how wealthy Russia is, she only has one vote. Whereas all the poor nations in Africa who have just emerged into independence, they have each a vote too. And they stick together and are able to outmaneuver the rich nations. This isn't by having independence and the right to vote in the political world body, it has enabled the dark nations to band together and use the strength of their ballot to force the wealthy nations, which are the white nations, into giving more independence to other nations who are still under their jurisdiction. You and I have to look at this and understand this, that the ballot is as powerful as the bullet.
Now, Brother Charles and Brother Greg, when you see young cats, the way they seem to know best how to get it to where they live is through the snatch and grab, through the robbing and the killing that leads to black-on-black killing, right? But somehow they're not aware of what Brother Malcolm is talking about. Help me understand the need. How do we get toward getting these young cats to understand that you can do more with your energy and with your mind that will be much more productive than where we've seen them place those attentions?
I believe a couple ways that could happen is for the people who've had failure through mistakes, opportunities and programs should be put together by, like I was speaking of, role models and mentors who look like them, who can give them opportunities in other ways out other than the gun or the drugs. But you don't have that. When the felons, they get out of jail, they treat them as if they're dead. So, like you said, it turns back to what else you going to do? If they put, you going to eat or you going to die? So they stuck in a position where they're choosing to eat because they don't have any other way out. Coming from the perspective of a felon, a guy who has not many other opportunities. But on the other end, we can have proactively speaking, you need to have programs that's there for the student in high school before he even becomes a male adult. That shows him other opportunities of education and economic standings and possibilities where he can have an opportunity to thrive versus failure. Because sometimes it only takes one mistake, and sometimes you get three and four mistakes. So I see a couple of opportunities there to change that outcome.
Okay. Thanks, Jenny. But y'all, want to weigh in?
Oh, man, he hit it right on the head. I agree with him. And I believe that we have to have more of a, definitely more influencing. There's got to be a better pitch out there that's painted, you know, for African-Americans as well, like as far as in the media. Like, we have to see more positive images and more positive stuff on the news that comes on the news to let people know that it's really a small percentage of people doing that. It's a lot more people out there that's doing well. We've got to show more of that about.
Okay, okay. That are being productive than what we see. We don't see that on the news.
We don't see that. We got to see this. People out there that's doing a lot of great things that they're not getting mentioned.
Right.
You know, they don't have that much recognition for the things they do. And definitely, I feel like definitely church and keep people spiritually motivated. But definitely, but outside of that, I feel like that image that we got of, you know, the athlete, the boxer, or the wrestler, they can't be the successful person. They can't be the only image of success because people just want to make money. They could have been selling pencils out here, anything. They just want to be successful. And I seem like they're going their route because that's the lifestyle they want. That seems like that's the only lifestyle in their knowledge, as far as their knowledge they have. That's the only way they can get it.
Right, right. Okay. You know,
Reverend Doctor.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
It's just another thing. Speaking of bouncing off what he was saying, that I completely agree, that I believe would be a major step in the success of the young black man. It's first, I don't see anything wrong with rap music, personally. I enjoy it myself. But the whole difference for the youth is they don't realize that they're listening to a fictional story.
Wow.
So I believe if the rappers were to step up and stop misleading the youth, because they're living in Brentwood and Beverly Hills. Stop telling these youths to, you know, because the kids really living the life that the rapper's rapping about, so it misguides the youth.
Yeah.
So if the rappers were to step up and just let it be known that they're telling a story versus misguiding and creating an even worse propaganda against their own, then we would see more opportunity for the black community.
Okay. Okay, great
point. It's the same thing of media.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Pastor Wallace.
Yeah, man, just listening to all the, I'm enjoying it. And I want to thank Sister Candy for coming in, Brother Smith, Brother Charles, man. Thank all of you for tapping in to the conversation tonight. What I'd like to say right now is what a difference a day can make. See, once we recognize what a day brings forth and start to apply it, just what we're doing right now. See, iron sharpens iron. And once you start doing that, heading the same direction, there's power in togetherness. And
right.
See, God specifies he'll do for us what we are unable to do for ourselves. But what we can't do for ourselves, that we can do for ourselves, see, God is allowing us to get it started. Now, I want you to take this for face value. In other words, there's nothing too hard to start. In other words, we want to see our communities turn around. Just utilize the word imagination. Use your imagination. Just imagine on every side of town, all over the world, all over the country, for a black man and woman to make a change.
Right.
We have to do something that initiates change. In other words, imagine all of us heading in the same direction, on the same page. You know how a certain community of brothers that walk around with their pants hanging down? It's crazy. It's out on the other side of town, and all of a sudden it's in the small cities and towns and things like that. How did it get that way? You see what I'm saying? Someone initiated that. So when we initiate a new way of life and something that'll cause them to guns down just for one day, for this very precious moment, man. You know, that counts. And see, God would be pleased with action. See, God is looking for action people. Not right. people that just talk. It would be detrimental to just talk this talk on this panel tonight with no action. You see, so I see the action, and I'm looking at it at a point of action, you know, going forth. That's what this is
right.
tonight, man. And I'm enjoying it, and that's why I'm sitting back a bit, Pastor Doc Ridley.
Well,
I thank you, man, for asking the callers to chime in and to speak positive solutions. Because when you get into the solution, you'll see change, man. I mean, it'll happen. I just imagine the judge being dismissed out of our neighborhood. Could you imagine the judge being dismissed out of our neighborhood? Because we don't have to have the law enforcement people to dismiss the drugs. We just stop doing them. See, that's the power that I'm working around with today.
Mm.
The drugs are still in the neighborhood, but I just don't do them anymore.
Right.
You see, so each one should be able to teach somebody how to do that. Not everybody knows how to do it. It's not easy. So as we talked earlier, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to shut it down. We talked earlier about a man bringing up a child when a boy's growing up without a father, and likewise, a daughter's growing up without a mother. But either way you look at it, if a mother has a son, and she just do the best that she can do because she just be the best mother that she can be. She'd never be able to be the mom and the dad. In my situation,
mm-hmm.
I brought my daughter. I could never be the mother, the father to my daughter. So I'd be the best father that I can be. And then they can just
right.
do what they can do. And if just so happens, a parent like yourself, Pastor Dockery, who brought up a son that was there, and you've done a great job, and you also have a daughter, you and your wife, and you're doing a great job with them. And not everybody knows that. So we have to say, what's that saying that you have, talking about the village?
It takes a village to raise a child.
So you can take that right there. Once we recognize it, we're heading in the same direction on the right page, and you're going to see the power of things take place. But until then, if we just talk about it, it didn't happen. So I just want y'all to know, man, I'm enjoying it.
All right. Before we move on, we want to take a brief break, but before we do that, move on to our next conversation. Let me hear from 1090. Good evening, sir. How are you?
How are you today, sir?
Mighty fine. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, I was listening. I'm going to be brief and I'm going to hold on. But now,
okay.
I'm listening to your piece concerning Malcolm X, talking about the ages
yes,
and things of this nature. When you spoke about the voting box. Now, listen to this.
Okay.
Here's the whole truth and nothing but the truth. When you go to the voting box, and when they talk about voters, they talk about the blacks, the whites, and the Hispanics. I think what Malcolm X was doing was telling the Asians to come in and get with the program. See?
Mm-hmm.
Now, all you have to do is listen and, you know, look. Stop, look, listen to what's going on. What Malcolm X was really trying to do was bring the Asians in to stand up. The Asians, they don't stand up. They've always sit down and go into the neighborhoods, sit in the hair, which they got the hair trade and things of that nature. Again, what Malcolm X, I'm an educated man. Malcolm X, he wasn't educated. He didn't even graduate high school. Nothing. You know, he got a platform. They gave him a platform on burn, baby, burn on the Muslim end, and they went with it. But this is what sometimes you have to stop, look, listen to what's going on. A lot of people have been trying to bring the Asians in, but at the voting booth, it's on the black, white, and Hispanics, where the Asians.
Okay.
See, Malcolm X was trying to tell them to come up. Trying to get the Asians to come up. No, the Asians are not coming up. They are docile people. Unlike the black, and the white, and Hispanics.
Well,
blacks and Hispanics, we fight. Asians, you were trying to bring them up. That's the key to that. But go on to your commercial now, hold on.
All right. Well, I appreciate you sharing with us here on Talk Straight. The number is 657-383-0944. When we come back, we'll pick up where we left off there. That's a very interesting position. We appreciate him sharing it with us here. And after this brief break, we'll be right back.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Gentlemen, we hear often people talking about what we need, what you need, what I need, and they say we wrote a book about it. We're trying to teach you how to live, how you should conduct yourself. What T.I. said is, you see me, but you don't know me. Any truth to that, Mr. Smith? Chop, bro, chop.
Hello.
Yes. From my point of view, I think education will be the key alpha to the youth of African Americans. And not just when I say education, I'm not just saying college. I believe it's different ways out. And just like the preacher was saying, you have to be able to look outside of the box when you're really looking to get out of where you're in, the position you're in. So I think once they begin to educate themselves by simply, you know, doing read more, but it's easy to say that, like the preacher was saying, but before people really start to take the action, we won't see change.
Right.
But I think self-education also work as going to college and, you know, whatever else, because a lot of the youth don't receive the education they need to even be productive in society. So I think education would be the key to economic freedom, because as of now,
you
have families on top of families who no one has graduated college.
Right.
So I think education would be the key.
Absolutely. Okay. Anyone else want to chime in on it before we – I want to go and listen to
– Hey,
Go ahead right quick.
The young man, he was correct on that. The only way that you're going to beat any kind of struggle, any kind of suppression, is through education. You have to educate yourself. The only way that you can educate yourself is you go to school. You have to go to college. You know, before you went off, I was talking about Malcolm X. He was talking about the Asians. Mm. The Asians are not going to come aboard. They will not participate. But yet and still, they would bring all the hair down into black neighborhoods and white neighborhoods. At the voting booth, it's only three people, sections of people, black, white, and Hispanics, go to the voting booth. Where the Asians? Malcolm X was trying to bring them up, but they didn't come. You know, all I have to do is just listen.
Let me say this. In that particular clip we heard from Malcolm X, in fact, all of Malcolm X's audience primarily were black people. What he was making a point of relative to the United Nations is that represented among that body of people, you have more other foreign nations, such as smaller nations like Asians. And Asians are not just China or Japanese, but there are other countries in the Asian region there. And what he was trying to say is if black people here in the United States would simply unify themselves, they are a greater number collectively, particularly when it comes to their voting districts and their precincts. And because there's more of them that are together in that area, that they have a better chance of voting things that are working in their best interest. But I think that's room for extended dialogue. Didn't want to stay there too long on that particular point, but I follow your point as well. I take your point as well relative to the matter. Let me do this.
Right.
Let me hear from Dr. King right quickly and get you all to comment there once we do so.
Okay, great. Good. Go ahead.
60 Minutes. Rewind.
Now what I'm saying is this. I would like for all of us to believe in nonviolence, but I'm here to say tonight that if every Negro in the United States turns against nonviolence, I'm going to stand up as a lone voice and say this is the wrong way.
Okay.
I will never change in my basic idea that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to the Negro in his struggle for freedom and justice. I think for the Negro to turn to violence would be both impractical and immoral.
There is an increasingly...
So, how important is it to share this concept that you can come swinging, but it ain't about who can swing, is who can last to the end. The race isn't given to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, but to he that can endure to the end. How important is it for us to share with young brothers and sisters who are ready to go to war today that violence is not going to be your life? I like what Brother Smith said about education. But, Brother Charles, what else can you – is there anything else you think that would be useful in at least addressing the violent mentality?
May I speak?
Yeah, 1 second, caller. Let me get Brother Charles. If you there, Brother Charles?
Yes, I'm here. Say it again.
Okay, go ahead. If you will, and then we'll hear from you 1098. Go ahead, Brother Charles. If you will, respond to that question.
As far as the violence, how nonviolence would be the answer to them, you know, to solve the issue?
Yeah. How do we get that message across that? Yes, you can pick up a gun and you can destroy a life, but is that resolving your problem? How do we get that to young cats in the street in particular?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Reverend
Dockery, I agree. I have the same dilemma in my mind because from all – I'm 30 years old. All the people that – I live in the streets. All the people I know – I agree 100% with Martin Luther King that violence only destroys. So through everyone I've spoken with, everyone believes violence is the key. So that's a major point. How do you stop the violence?
Okay, good point. Let me hear from 1098 And then Pastor Wallen, now we're gonna give y'all some. We're gonna lay something on you. Go ahead, 1098.
Okay. How you stop it? You stop it by preaching nonviolence, saying nonviolence. You know, the only way you stop the violence is to do the violence. If you just stand back and say nothing, the violence will continue. When I was coming up, especially in the early 70s, you know, it was about nonviolence. We didn't fight. We didn't kill one another. This message is a message that still needs to be spread today. But understand, you have traffic out there, drug dealers. Now, I was a dope dealer myself back in the day, and I sold marijuana anywhere I went. It wasn't a such thing as a turf, you know?
Okay.
And the quality of the marijuana is not the quality of marijuana today. See, this is the problem, you know? Love one another. Love your black brother. If your white brother want to love you, love him too. You know, love everybody. But don't fight. Do not fight.
Okay.
Here in Nashville,
okay.
Look at Casey. Okay, go ahead, sir.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
You know, but look at Casey. Casey Holmes here in Nashville. Look at all the stuff that's going on. Is it drug related? Is it gang related? You know, when I was coming up in the 60s and 70s, we didn't do that. You know, I mean, if I was going to fight Reverend Dockery, it was somebody there to stop and say, hey, no, stop it. But now it's do it. Shoot it.
Right.
And
right.
I'll stop. Go ahead on.
Okay. Well, we Reverend appreciate Dockery. You sharing there. We appreciate Pastor Waller, you want to, I know you and I have specifically done some things in the streets relative to this, but you want to share some ideas there?
Yeah, Pastor Dockery, I thank God, man, every day for the newness of life. And when you don't have valuable information, you know, and I say that because I didn't have written information or written instructions when I was in the street. I had instructions, but they were not written instructions. And see, now today, for those of us who have the written instruction that has been given to us, passed down to us, and know how to apply it, then it's only fair that the Word of God did say that the harvest truly is plentiful. I mean, it's a whole lot of people lost it. It's big out there. It's all over. It's
right.
Proven that. It's a truth to that. And he said, but
right.
The laborers are few. You know, in other words, he said that for a purpose, because all he needed was a few people who were actually putting the word down strong enough,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
where
mm-hmm.
He feels it out, and that it will make a difference. It may not be, you know, how when one plant a seed, and then someone else come and put some water on it and let God give it the increase. But see, if the seed is not putting down, God don't have no room to give no increase to it, because the seed hasn't been put down. Let's just put the seed down. And then put some water on it and watch God give it the increase, because that's what he's waiting on us to do. He's looking for a few people that stand on the word of God, that won't compromise, that won't. See, when I look at what's going on the outside, I don't look at it like that. I look at it that there's still hope. Because if I looked at what's going on, I would look at it, hey, man, there's no hope. They're shooting each other down each and every day, and they're increasing in it. But I don't look at that. I look at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, when it says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, evidence of things not seen. In other words, there are some unseen things that God is getting ready to do, only if the few people will put forth the effort, and like the brother said earlier about action, because God is a God of action, and by him, actions are weighed. You know, he'll weigh up our action, man, and that's when he'll say, you got too many people that scattered too many ideas and too many thoughts. Nobody wants to follow the leader. Everybody wants to lead, but if you've been a follower all of your life, and you have paid your dues as a follower, and then God give you a position to lead, don't try to strip the person from being a leader. Just follow him and find out which direction he's going, and stop trying to put your following leadership into the front, and just learn how to follow. That's what I had to do. I followed the man, and I was all right with it. I didn't know God. You see what I'm saying? I knew the man, so I followed him. And that way, I was able to go back to my community and get up on the street corner and put the seed down. See, there's a lot of brothers ready to change already because of the seed. Not because I see it. It's because of the seed. You see what I'm saying? And I'm walking by faith and not sight. And I keep on calling, man. I mean, it's not easy, brother, being out on the streets when you got all this commotion going on, when you got mothers and grandmothers can't even sit out on the porch and enjoy themselves, sit in the little rocking chair. You can't even see none of that going on right now because of the fear of the people that are in the church house with this strong information. I'm talking about the Bible. Got the instructions in there, and he says, go out into the world and preach the gospel to every creature. That means the people out there just gunning each other down, they need to be spoken to, man. Right. And it's they're looking for somebody to come and talk to them. You dig? Sure. And so that's how I'm at with it, man. I mean, I just pray and please, man, because if I don't stay right there, brother, I'll go out there and join them in the shooting if I don't stay right there.
Oh, no,
so
don't do that.
Oh, man, listen, if I keep going on what them folks in the church talking about, I might as well join them out there, man, because they're afraid I'm in the church, but they're going to glorify God in church. And then as soon as they leave the church house, they're afraid to go out there and talk to the people, man. I don't understand that.
Well, now,
I don't understand it, man. I don't understand it.
That's a great point. First of all, if you go right now and walk up to a young cat with a pistol stuck down his britches and you tell him, give me your gun, give me your drugs, you're subject to get your head peeled back. Don't do that.
Right.
Okay. That's not
right.
Is that right, Brother Charles and Greg?
100% for sure. 100% guaranteed.
Don't do that.
Here's what you do.
You recognize that the expression of violence that we see comes from somewhere. See, those people that are perpetrating the violence, guess what else we know about? We know they can be violent, but we also know that there are times where they get sleepy, they get hungry, they get sad.
Yeah.
They have fears, they have aspirations, they have disappointment, and they're trying to find success in the street. Why don't they have it? Because there are people that have been blessed, like myself and others, who have not effectively rid their environment of the need to feel like I got to express myself with violence. Now, watch this. When you arrest a cat for shooting somebody selling dope, what do you do with him? You send him to jail. When he gets to jail, what is he learning? Not one thing, but how to be a criminal. Right? Now, here's what we need to do.
Right.
Listen to me now. Listen to me carefully. We got a juvenile court and an adult court. What we need to do, black men, Brother Greg, as you were saying, need to get our stuff together, and we need to put together the appropriate therapeutic home environment where rather than sending these young cats to jail, send them to that therapeutic home and teach them how to be responsible human beings such that they don't have to resort to violence. But we don't have nothing like that set up.
Amen. We don't have it.
Everybody asks for money and taxes you out of the wazoo, but we can't see none of that in our neighborhoods and our community. That's part of the problem. So-called leadership, politically and religious leadership, have failed to address the needs and the concerns, particularly about young people.
Yeah. Hey, Pastor, did you hear Ms. Candace say something about...
Hold on 1 second, 1098. Go ahead, Pastor. Hold on 1 second, 1098.
Okay, 1098. Okay, this is me. Now, you know, I listen to stuff about planting a seed. Let me tell you something about a seed. You could plant a seed, but if you don't put water on that seed, I mean, it could be summer.
Right.
It could be dry.
Right.
If you don't go out and attend to that seed and put water on that seed, that seed will not grow. Now, that's a good gesture, but overall, it holds no weight. You just cannot plant a seed and walk off and say it's going to grow. You have to go back.
You're absolutely right.
And you have to tend to.
Right.
We're talking about people now, which are the seeds. You talk to these people.
Correct.
You just cannot talk to them and walk off and say it's going to grow. No, you have to continuously be around these people.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so this old thing about planting a seed is a grow, or you plant a seed, if you don't go back and tend to that seed, it will
right.
not grow.
Right.
It will not prosper. It will not bring nothing else in.
Absolutely.
If I plant a seed in one human being, if I'm talking to a human being, I'm going to continuously stay in contact with that human being. You just can't talk and walk off when somebody's going to grow. It will not grow, and I'll be quiet.
Correct.
Go ahead,
Pastor,
sir.
Pastor, go ahead. Pastor, go
okay,
ahead.
Now let me explain something to you, Pastor. I think we were talking about earlier about planting seed, as the brother was just saying. Do you remember when I say you plant a seed, go back and put some water on it, and allow God to
yes,
give it to you? That's
that,
why the word
I,
of God
I
says faith comes by hearing. Faith comes by
right.
hearing. You know, and that's what we got to do. We got to listen. Because, see,
okay.
if I don't know what I know, then it's only me saying it. That's why I say what I say, because I've already been taught that you know, one, put the seed down, one, come back and put the water, and let God give it the increase. That's what I said.
Right.
And the reason why
okay.
I said that, because I know it works. That's what I've been doing. I mean, I've seen it work.
Okay.
I know the power
okay.
of it. And you know, and
right.
see, it's important for us to always remember, you know, how genuine it is when you're coming from the heart. I say, I didn't even know God. I knew a man that knew God. I didn't trust God. I trust that man, and I followed him. You see what I'm saying? And so when I became a leader, you know, sometimes I heard in the church, I'm going to praise him if I had to praise him all by myself. Sometime at least
mm-hmm.
I have to be out there by himself. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Because I,
absolutely.
One can cause 10 to be at flight. You know,
sure.
1,000 to be at flight, 10,000 to be at flight when you got a couple of people in that. Can you imagine what a group of people can do together all over the time? You can see the ministry of town, brother. You know, if people would just get out and just put that seed down. And then let somebody come back and put water on it. And it don't matter whether it was the one who put the seed down or who put the water down. As long as God give it the increase, man, that's what's going to make it all right. See, when you put God first, man, it makes a big difference, man. I mean, I'm
sure.
telling you, brother, I mean, toiling out there in the streets like I have done for these years, it was not easy, and it's still not easy. But guess what
right.
I do? I keep right on toiling just the same, man. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
And I'm right in the midst of the folks with the guns. I'm right in the midst of them when they get ready to gun each other down. Some of them I have stopped from doing it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's what
right.
it is, man. And it ain't because
yeah.
I didn't have nothing else to do. It's because it's hard work, man, and somebody have to
yeah.
learn. You know? And God that's
bless.
Just the way it is. Yes, sir.
So
that's
what,
just the way it is.
What we're saying, and we're in agreement on this, and that is that there is certainly a need. There is certainly a need for a certain thought to be supplanted, to be nourished, and to be monitored as well. Now, here's the thing. When we come in to, let's say, the housing project, I grew up in the housing project in Chicago. When we come in there, the idea is I'm only going to be here for a short period of time. And when I'm done, I'm going back, as Brother Smith said, back to Peel Hill or somewhere that is detached from that reality. No, what we have to do is we have to make full-scale investment and commitment to long-term effect in those neighborhoods, in those communities. But it starts with the people. The people have to learn. Let me explain something about violence. Violence is the last run of a continuum, and it starts with ignorance. When a person don't know enough, it's easy for them to get spooky and to get scary about what's going to happen to them, especially when they're in a new environment around people they don't know. The more they become afraid and anxious, the more likely they are to strike out in violence, simply because they don't know what's
right.
going to happen. They assume
right.
that somebody or something is threatening me, and that puts them
exactly.
in a position where they act out of violence. Now, what happens is, even in your own community, young cats that grew up with one another, went to school, played with one another on the playground, they wind up committing violence. Why? Because they think, if I don't kill you, you're going to kill me. So survival dictates that I destroy you before you get me. Those are the type of things that grown men need to go back and speak to our young brothers about in terms of not just surviving, but learning how to live. You got to survive. At some point, we got to teach them how to live. Now, the next thing I want to do, we got about 24 minutes here before the show ends. I want to hear from Ben Carson. Now, Greg?
Yes.
There are people who today I hear, and even in church, just past Sunday, suggesting Ben Carson ain't got nothing to say to us. I want you to listen to him, Charles and Greg, and tell me if he's making any sense. Check this out just for a second. Tell me if what he's saying is making sense. If you didn't know nothing about him, is his words making sense?
I think poverty to a large extent is also a state of mind. If you have the right mindset, you can take everything from them and put them on the street. And I guarantee you, in a little while, they'll be right back up there. And you take somebody with the wrong mindset, you can give them everything in the world. They'll work their way back down to the bottom.
No, you
got to
do
that.
Is there any truth to that, gentlemen? Greg?
Yeah.
Yes.
Charles?
I think it's 100% a fact. I think that is the difference between poverty and not being poor. Just the simply the mindset, because those who succeed, even the ones who came from the same gutter, it's something about that twinkle in the eye of the tiger, that won't allow them to fail.
I can see
that.
And vice versa, the ones who have everything and you just, they don't have the right mind frame to even change or to succeed.
What about that, Charles?
Yeah, if you got the right mindset, but think about it, how many people have it, though?
Not many.
That's it.
Not many.
That's it, Charles. That's our problem, man.
Everybody don't possess it, so. You have
Charles,
to go deeper than that. How do you make people who don't possess it comprehend as well so they will possess it?
Absolutely. I didn't mean to cut you off, but what you said last show, Charles, is really what set us up for this conversation tonight. And that is, too many people don't have the right guidance and information to make the changes they need to make for themselves. That's what you were saying. That's what I concluded from what you were saying. And that is so true. Now, part of what this show is designed to do is to document our dialogue. Is somebody on their phone there? We're picking you up on the air here. Part of what this show is designed to do is to make it possible for these words, this information that we're sharing tonight, to be shared with a larger audience, because it's a pre-recorded show and others can come back from time to time again to archive it, to listen to it. More important, we want to get it out to people because these are the ideas and the thoughts. And one of the reasons we had young men to come on is because they know what's going on in the street. Is that right, Greg?
Yes, sir.
Didn't you say you were regularly out there, so you're familiar with what the handle is on the block? Is that right?
Every other day.
Okay. And so y'all excuse my urban vernacular, but I just want to keep it 100 right now. I want to keep it like it is. Keep it real right now. That's where we are. But the truth of the matter is, when we talk about economic freedom, you have to bring that for yourself. And if you're not prepared to bring something to the table other than your anger, other than your pain, other than your desire to make somebody else feel your pain, it's going to be difficult for you to even communicate with anyone else in terms of doing better. And I think that's what Brother Charles was saying. Did I get you wrong, Charles?
You're right.
Okay. And so, gentlemen, when we start talking about how do you get those young cats on the streets to not want to be violent, you know, one of the things we got to do is hold people we elect in office who are supposed to be making sure that there's an appropriate allocation of resources that are designated for our communities. We're not getting it. Somebody's spending the money, but we're not seeing the benefit. And LaShawda's out there saying, I'm going to have to get it the way I live. And because I'm, you know, everybody else rich, I want to get rich, or I'm going to die trying to get. Is that what the, is that the philosophy on the street?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, man.
Now, we can change, we can flip that mindset. We can flip that mindset by this entrepreneurial thought and the idea that take a risk to make a change for yourself. I know you're comfortable with what you're doing now, but take a chance on change, doing things differently. First, change your mind, and then changing your behavior. You'll be amazed at how much more improved the quality of life can be for you and everybody you love. That's the one thing that we're not getting to. See, Greg, when you talked about education, you were right. But understand something about what education means. It is simply a process or procedure for teaching. But you got to ask yourself, what is it that we're teaching? What our young men are not teaching, what our young men are not being taught is self-identity, self-worth, purpose, and belief that they're capable to be independent one day. That's what they're not being taught. They've been taught
or
about everything
in or integrity.
Or integrity. That's correct. That's correct. This is not in the curriculum in the public school system. So what that says, brethren, is that it's necessary for us to create pro-social instruction or a curriculum content information that will be taught. Well, who can best teach that? What Greg said is it takes a man, a father ought to be that. Grown men ought to be teaching boys how to be men.
Yes, Reverend Docker. Reverend, no, I didn't say a father now because I don't want that to be the excuse because it's not always a father there, but it takes a strong male.
Sure.
It's a plenty of strong males there that could help and change things.
Absolutely.
May I speak?
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay, you mentioned pro-social.
Yes,
to the young man, what the definition of pro-social is helping someone. You know, I mean, if you're in a department store, some fall on the floor, you pick it up and get an individual. You're being pro-social. Your brother in the street, if they, you know, if they're doing something wrong, you pick them up, you lift them up. I'm pro-social.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Reverend Dockery, pro-social. Pro-social means helping someone that's in some type of distress. And I'll be quiet.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you offering that in dialogue. So at the end of the day, gentlemen, what I want to make sure I do before we leave this air tonight, we got 16 minutes, is to offer you a appropriate response to how do we stop the violence. Okay? And I want to be very clear that just telling them put your guns down or giving them some Kroger cards to go get some groceries, or that dog ain't gonna hunt. You got a poodle, you trying to send out to the woods to hunt rabbits. You need you a hound dog or a Labrador retriever or something. That dog will not hunt. But what we have to do is to be very focused and deliberate about making sure that cats know that if you trust us, Pastor Walsh, if you extend us your trust, that we're going to, as the brother from 1098 was saying, we're going to be there long-term with you. We ain't going nowhere. And we're working to transform the economic, social, and even health conditions of your neighborhood, your block, so that you don't have to feel always on edge and looking over your shoulder. That's where the process starts. Now, I can speak from experience and tell you that I went to several areas where young cats were just standing out, and everybody was strapped. You know the first thing I did? I asked for permission. Now, I'm a grown man, and this is America. I can go anywhere I want to. But I asked the young dude, he didn't look like he was a day over 15, if I might have permission to stand there and have a conversation with them. See, first you got to respect the fact that this is where they live, and what they're
really
trying to do is say we're protecting our ground.
Yes,
somebody would have argued. Somebody would have argued I should have brought the police over there with me. No, that's the wrong gown.
Oh, no. No,
that's the wrong gown.
Reverend Docker.
Yes.
Reverend Docker.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Speaking of the point you just was making, that's the same. I mean, that's just something that I'm thinking of that could change things. I think if we created a brotherhood where, like Malcolm X said, Martin Luther King said, you use unity to change things, and a certain amount of number of men, they don't have to be doctors and lawyers, but men with the right frame of mind come into the community and reach out to these youth, then I believe things will change.
But you know,
and maybe they
will
become doctors and lawyers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, but a man who works in a warehouse is also a successful man.
Absolutely.
So, yes, sir.
I just believe
we had
men with the right, a certain amount of group that continued to grow, and they went into all kind of neighborhoods and reached out to the youth, we would see a difference. Because unity, one gun can't kill 1,000 men.
But you know what? You know what has to happen first, Brother Smith? We got to grow the chronologically. We have to grow the chronologically male up to maturity. You made a powerful point at the beginning of the show. Just because you're 30 years old don't mean you're functioning emotionally on the level of a 30-year-old.
What you'll see is most young black men. That's right. Most young black men that are 30 are really 18.
Or
I agree. So they got a. May I speak, Reverend Docker?
Hold on one second. Let me
18
let him
years
finish.
Old.
Let me go. 1098. Hold on. Let him finish his thought. Then we'll come right back to you,
okay?
Go ahead, Brother Smith. What were you saying? Or was that Charles?
No, it wasn't me. It wasn't Miss Smith.
Okay, go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, I think for a star like Forrest, getting a turnaround is we're gonna have to design like some kind of class or something that's mandatory you have to take. Just like you have to go to school and they get the education. We're gonna have to get a different type of education that's gonna be beneficial. So we ain't gonna get it nowhere else.
That's true.
I mean, everybody that works doing something, you know, they build that life, but at the same time, they need proper education. The only way to guarantee proper education is our people gonna have to stand up and get in those education positions.
Right. Right.
They're not going to be one. So it's going to have to be another school outside of public school that everybody must attend, because every household needs to be fed the same thing at the same time.
That's powerful right there, brother. That's powerful right there. Okay. 1098, I'm sorry, man. Go ahead. Chime in.
Okay. Since they were talking about 30-year-old people, you got four levels of retardation. You got mild, you got moderate, you got severe, and profound. Now, I realize you got 30-year-old men running around, can't read, maybe on a third grade reading level or whatever. Let me see where they fall. They fall on moderate. That's anywhere between 20 to 45 or better. But the thing is this, if these young men would just go out, you know, when they come across people, talk to them about doing the right thing. But foremost, set a good example. Show them that they can. Show them that they can, rise above all the ignorance and come to the light. Not to be, you know, just be good orators. Showing the right path, and
great point. I want to emphasize that the nature of the seminar lectures and the workshops and the think tank sessions that BFC Institute facilitate are geared to, Greg, not just reach those who have formal education or degrees, but more importantly, those who are without those, and bring them to a point where they can use the knowledge base that they have. to assume that a drug dealer don't have no knowledge, you short. You come up short already. To assume that a gangbanger has no knowledge, you come up short, right? Because you got the wrong understanding of who they are and how they get down and how they survive, how they exist. You've got to embrace people where they are and then offer them the information you have and let them intelligently decide, hey, this is beneficial to me. Here's how I move forward. And that's essentially what our workshops are geared to do, to engage people and to bring, that's what education means, to educe or bring out that which is in. That's what the process does. It extracts out of the individual what is in them, what they desire and motivations are. And that's how they learn, basically. We measure that learning by the change in their behavior. That's what learning is when you can see somebody has been exposed to a certain experience or base of knowledge, and you can see a change in the way they think and they act, you know that person have learned something. And that's what we're not seeing, is the process of learning working very well for many of the young people that we're talking about, simply because, as Charles said beautifully, we don't have the proper structure for teaching and training. Now, some people may disagree with that, but I contend, I have been saying that for the last 15 years. We've got to change the structure for learning and instruction for our young people in particular. Now, some people are going to do well. Some people are able to move on, and they have other individuals to help them. But the vast majority of them don't have that. They stuck in the trap. Man, time is working against us. We only got about 7 minutes before we got to go. And I want to give you, brother,
I'm about to hang up, but God bless all you gentlemen. It has been a great conversation. And
yes, sir.
I look forward to some more conversations in the future.
All right, sir.
And I hang up, but I'll call back. When you coming back on, sir?
Next Tuesday, 7 o'clock.
I'll be on Tuesday, 7 o'clock or 7:30 or before 8. But God bless all of you all. And I hope you young men would try to reach some of these other young men and bring them in. And I'll hang up.
Absolutely. We appreciate you, my friend. All right. So, Pastor Waller?
Yes, sir.
You sitting back and you laying back chilling, ain't you?
Yeah, man. I got a lot of people on there, man, and I was just grateful for the people who came on. Is Miss Candace still in?
No, she left us a little while ago.
Okay, well, I just want to let her know how much I appreciate her tapping in, and Brother Smith again, Brother Charles and the other brothers that just got through hanging up. But let me explain something to you, brother. Man, I'm going to tell you about how learning is powerful. And in the streets, there are teachers, and school is always in session.
See? Okay.
And that's the,
okay.
You know, school is always in session, man. There's a lot of learning going on. And some teachers teach, and they get it immediately, and some teachers teach, and they get it later on. But either way it goes, the teaching is going on. Now, what are we learning from the teachers? It's amazing. And so I personally want to thank God for allowing me to recognize that street life have teachers. And, you know, sometimes you be laid down the wrong avenue and get captured, as you said earlier, by the trap. And I know what it is to be in the trap, and I understand and I appreciate being free from the trap. And to know that there are so many more out there that's fresh in the trap, man, and those that's been in the trap for a while. But either way it goes, you know, we was talking earlier about the age of 30. You know, young brother said he was 30. Is that not right, Brother Smith? You're 30?
Yes, sir.
And I didn't change until I was 34, man. I was still thinking like a child at the age of 34.
Wow. And on my 25th birthday, I began to change my thinking.
Yeah, that's good, brother. Because the word of God says, man, that when I was thinking like a child. I didn't know it was in the Bible, but I found out later on. I saw, man, I've been thinking like a child for 34 years. And that's when I cried for help, man.
Okay.
You know, God turned my life around. I got off the drugs that I was on. And, you know, I wrote a book, and the book is entitled Steer High, man. And so this book is to be introduced to people and to let them know that in that trap that some are in, they qualify for a book like this, you know, because a lot of them are getting high, and they don't know that it's just started. Before you know it, they done spent 20, 30 years of getting high. That's what happened to me, and I just want to be able to extend it to someone else to say, you don't have to wait as long as I did. Or if you're in that, been in that long, you still can get out. And that's the good part about our good God, is he can help you get out of the trap if you want. Yeah, so Pastor Doctor, keep up the good, man. I just want to thank you again for all the brothers and the sisters for tapping in to the conversation.
We got four minutes here. Let me final words from Brother Smith and Brother Charles there, if you all will. Just give us a, you know, we appreciate you, gentlemen. And I ask you all to come on specifically because I think it's important that the audience understand that you do have a perspective. I appreciate what you're saying, Brother Smith. You all have a very important perspective on the problem and the solution and the steps to reaching. So I wanted to recognize that, but let me be quiet and let you all. Any final thoughts? Either one of y'all want to go first there?
Sure, I will. I really appreciate the conversation myself. I learned a lot from it. And, like I said, the call to action to me would be just to start that, like you said, implement a program where we actually teach them and showing people the characteristics physically and personally, mentally, what it takes to become a black male successfully. So that's just my view on it completely. We just need to teach it, and then I believe we'll start to see that change that the preacher was talking about.
All right,
Brother
Charles. All right. I'd like to thank you for even setting up taking the time out to set up, you know, the radio show. I mean, that's a start by itself. And getting to know what the next person, you know, is thinking. Because there's a lot of people out here that's probably thinking the same thing we're thinking, but nobody is talking about it. It seems like when we come in front of each other, we go out and back into a mode of, so how your day been going? How the kids been doing? We're not sitting there talking about real things and stuff like that.
Right.
So I appreciate you that. That's a definite start because I'm learning there's more people out there. So I appreciate that.
Praise God. Praise God.
Bless
we
God.
Want to grow. We want to grow in that regard. I want to thank Pastor Waller, too, for being on here as a panelist and sharing what he does. All of us have an important piece of the puzzle. And if we bring our pieces together, we can put this puzzle together, man. And but eventually we got to mold it and put it on the wall so that it can stay together.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you all very much. We got 90 seconds. We're going to end on this note, and we're going to ask that you all to stay tuned for our next show. Go to www.bfcinstitute.com and access everything, the Facebook group and everything else, and join us there. Go to our thread. You can respond to some of the questions that were posted on the Facebook thread as well. But thank you, gentlemen, again, and look forward to us to coming back again this next Tuesday, where we will pick up our next show on Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, and we're going to leave on this note. We're going to keep on pushing.